Welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray. I'm a coach and I primarily support working parents and carers who believe that parenthood shouldn't be a barrier to a successful and fulfilling career. In this podcast series, I chat to inspirational working parents and ask them to share their own experiences of raising children alongside their careers. We talk about the struggles and the moments of joy. And I hope in each episode, there's something that can bring you a bit more strength and positivity. So please follow, listen and subscribe on all major platforms. So welcome to this edition of The Parent Equation. I'm really, really happy to be joined today by James Miller. James is a father of two, a journalist, the author of The Gender Agenda and Dads Don't Babysit, and also the editor of workingdads.co.uk. Which sounds like a lot on your plate, James. So welcome and thanks for being here.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot. It's not that much. The books are all done. I have to say at the start of this year, my New Year's resolution was to write another book. And that went out the door on the 4th of January when schools were sent home. One of my shortest lived New Year's resolutions. But when I get around to it, then that'll be a lot of work. But
well, hopefully schools will go back. I promise you, schools will go back. And then hopefully you'll have at least half a year where you can write that book.
Yeah, I might have lost the urge by then. That's the trouble. You know, I had that new year. Right, this year I'm going to do it. I've been pondering an idea for a long time. I'm going to do it, and then bang, away it went. But you know, that's life for working parents at the moment.
It is. You know? How long does it take you to write a book then? So your last one, which was Dads Don't Babysit, which was a couple of years ago. How long do you think it actually takes you to put all that together and get it launched?
It depends, really. Yeah, I mean, the last one, first conversations must have been had in, 2017? And then did we get it out a year later? Is that right? Mm-hmm. It was very quick. Maybe it was a couple of years. But, you know, it depends. It's, books. Books are weird because, you know, you write it and you think that's it finished. That's so not it finished. Because then you've got to, you know, do all the editing and all that sort of stuff. And then you've actually got to sell it. That's the hard bit. That's the really killer bit because, you know, apart from anything, it's not really my thing. And yet you have to go out there and say, read my book. Look, I'll buy my book. Actually, don't really, you know, buy it. Give me money, essentially.
Marketing yourself is one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is. Because we're not necessarily, that's not what we're here for, is it? So...
No, I have to learn something. I don't know. I won't give away what the idea is, but we'll see if it turns into a book. It might also be a podcast, but there's a lot of them around, so I don't know. We'll see.
We'll stay tuned either way.
Let's get through lockdown and then
we'll work on it. So James, obviously you're immersed in campaigning, if that's the right word, for I suppose the rights of working parents and especially working fathers, and that's obviously a passion I share, hence why you're on my podcast today. So just to start with, do you think what's the changing face of working dads that you've experienced over the last few years?
Well, one of the things I don't want to pick you up right at the beginning, but although yes, absolutely, I'm all about the rights of working dads. Mm. The reason I'm all about the rights of working dads is to help working mums or to help women and men and everyone. This is, you know, it's a tricky one because I don't want to seem picky, but. Mm. You have to be clear that the reason I'm interested in making life better for men is because it will make life better for women and their children, everybody's children and everyone. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that's changed in recent years is that people are switching on to that and realizing that if, you know, you are to close the gender pay gap, if you are going to help women progress in the workplace or to have genuine choice about what they do in terms of work and domestic life, men are a massive part of that. Yep. Jigsaw. You've got to tackle that issue. And I think, yeah, things are changing. You know, I look back, I don't know how I ended up with a 13-year-old. I'm just a young man. I've got a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. How did that happen? I can't be that old, can I? But, you know, when my 13-year-old was born, I had 2 weeks of unpaid paternity leave.
Yep.
When my 10-year-old, you know, in 2010, I had 2 weeks of paid paternity leave. Mm. So, you know, things were changing there. You know, 5 years later, of course, shared parental leave came in, and that's not made a huge difference. But the fact that it's there is quite important. And we are seeing now more and more companies. I mean, I am sort of surrounded by it, because, you know, it's my job for working dads. Yeah. We're very much about sharing best practice and flagging up people that are doing the good stuff for dads and families. But we are seeing companies taking it seriously now, increasingly. It's interesting. It starts in the city, I would suggest. There's a lot more banks and such like. You know, Aviva obviously come up time and again.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Because they're, and fair play to them, because they're really good at it. You know, I often say to other companies, you know, I say, look, you know, people sort of roll their eyes. Oh, why are we talking about Aviva again? It's because they're doing really good stuff. You do the really good stuff, you'll get all the good publicity as well, you know. But they do, you know, they do equal parental leave. They don't, key to what Aviva do, and to be fair, it's not just Aviva. I mean, there's people like Zurich are also very good on this. They normalize it. They don't just say you can have 16 weeks of parental leave. They say, why are you not taking it to their men, to the men that are becoming dads? You know, they show case studies. So they really, it's through the DNA of the company now. And that's quite important, obviously, given we're going into what looks like already in tricky economic times, very weird economic times. But if it's through the DNA of the company, then hopefully they will stick with it. And I think they will, seeing quite a lot of interest, in fact, in D&I stuff in the current climate, which is very positive and hopeful. But yeah, it's interesting that it's starting in the sort of big city corporations to some extent. I think that is fascinating, because I think you will begin to see a trickle down from there. I know trickle down economics are controversial, but I do think stuff will trickle down. So I think it's interesting that it's starting there, and I think it will begin to spread more and more. And it is catching on in some perhaps unexpected places. You know, I've spoken to sort of one sector that I speak to quite a bit about this, because they don't know how to deal with it, is construction.
Right.
Now, you know, the sort of stereotype is of your brickie who has no interest, you know, goes out, builds walls, and is, you know, goes down the pub with his mates at the end of the day and doesn't have a lot of interest in all this. And of course, that is absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
Construction firms are really struggling with this, I find, because they're sort of going, well, their workforce is largely male, and they do want flexible working. They want a better work-life balance. And the construction firms are sort of going, well, how do we do it? And they really, and I sort of say to them, it's not that hard. And I think, you know, it's interesting that they want to do it. That's a great sign. But they sort of feel like it's something, you know, flexible working and stuff like this is sort of something foreign. But you just sort of say, well, you know, why not? You can have a job share. You know, somebody can come and build a wall from 7 to 1. I mean, I appreciate construction is more than just building walls, but, you know, just as a very simple case example, you know, somebody can build a wall from 7 to 1, he can go home, somebody can go in and build a wall from 1 to 5, you know,
different wall.
With a different wall at the end of the day, you know. And I appreciate it. Clearly it's more complex than that in many cases. Some cases it's not more complex than that. But there's a sort of feeling that it is somehow weird and foreign and difficult, but it doesn't have to be.
And I think your use of the word DNA actually is really interesting, because I think I've come across this time and time again, spoken to many working fathers who said that even though their employer advocates flexible working and has parental leave and has all the tick box exercises done, they know that if they actually ask for any of those things that they're entitled to, they will feel like they are going to miss out on promotion, they are going to miss out on management opportunities, they're going to be out of the loop for too long, and their employer doesn't support that. So when you talk about the DNA, that makes it part, as you said, the fabric of the company then believes in that. It's not just a tick box exercise for HR to say we offer all these rights and let's go. So how do you think even those companies who are paying lip service to it, how can those companies really make it part of their DNA?
It's well, first of all, you have to buy into it, right? You have to believe in it. As you say, it has to be not just a tick box exercise. And that involves, you know, making the case for it, because it works. You know, companies who have, we know, have diverse workforces, who have diverse leadership teams are more successful than those that don't. And, you know, there's plenty of evidence out there for that. I think it can seem almost counterintuitive if your leadership team are all, you know, male, pale and stale. It's very easy to hang around with the same people. And hire people like you. But I say there's plenty of evidence that that won't work. I think this is one where legislation does have a role. I don't think legislation is not necessarily always the case and not always helpful to say, you know, government do something. But we have seen, you know, gender pay gap reporting did make a difference. You know, companies were shamed into doing something about it and were embarrassed to say that they had a massive gender pay gap. And obviously the government has rolled that back. And I think we all need to be very wary that they're going to try and dump that. And if they do, then we need to shout, make sure they don't, because what they need to be doing is going further and actually making companies publish their parental policies and publish take up as well. It's crucial. It's not just about saying, yes, we, you know, as you say, we offer 16 weeks of paternity leave. How many people are actually using it is really important. And that's, you know, it's the power of role modeling, which is massive. And that's something I find throughout this, is that the number of dads I speak to who have taken shared parental leave or gone flexible or whatever, they do it because they see somebody else do it, whether it's in the company or whether they, you know, in their circle of friends or they've talked to somebody or whatever. The power of role modeling is massive in this.
And we have to hold people accountable, as you say, for proving these things are happening within their companies.
Absolutely.
So just moving on, I suppose we've talked about employers being supportive of working fathers. We're now in a role, or working parents rather, we're now in a world where we are having to work flexibly, in inverted commas, because we are remote and we are losing technology far more than we did before. Have you seen, from personal experience and also from talking to the working parents that you do through your career, the impact of this new remote working, the impact that's having on family life and potentially the balance between the primary breadwinner and the primary carer, for want of a better word? Have you seen the impact of that?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? It's really, I mean, here's the good thing, right? I get to share my desk with the best coworker I've ever had. I mean, in some ways he's awful because he gives me a running commentary on everything he's doing and he asks questions all the time. It's not particularly helpful for getting work done, but there's nobody I'd rather have sitting at the desk opposite me than my 10-year-old. I did find the last lockdown actually harder because in November, because usually I find I work better if I sort of go out to a cafe, you know, not all the time, but once or twice a week, and it gets, I find the walk there gets my brain working, and for whatever reason that environment works well for me. But of course we couldn't do that in November, so it was literally just sitting at my kitchen desk looking out at a bare garden, the same bare garden,
wintry garden,
you know, and that was, it was boring. You know, in many ways it's not better now, there's homeschooling, but you know, there are elements of it that are better. However, you know, there's a lot of downside to this, let's face it. You know, the biggest one, of course, is that we know that women are being hit harder because women are having to do more caring. You know, that's why they're being furloughed or you know, losing their jobs. It drives me absolutely nuts. I mean, it's things like, I think WhatsApp groups are really interesting, actually. I mean, I know there's a lot of sort of issues around WhatsApp groups, but I do think they're interesting for sort of getting a taste for what's going on. And I think they're very interesting in terms of gender dynamics. But, you know, I see the class WhatsApp group and the mums, mainly mums on there. I've written before about why that is not good and it shouldn't be the case. And all the dads should be in the class WhatsApp. Well, but I see the mums on there saying, you know, they're getting run ragged and their husband just shuts himself in the office because his work is so much more important, and he's probably got a full-time job and is the primary breadwinner, and so somehow gets to just go, well, my job's more important. That's not okay. You know, my house is weird because I'm the part-time worker and the primary caregiver, and my partner is the primary breadwinner. But she doesn't just lock herself away and go, I've got work, get on with it, you know. We talk to each other and say, well, I've got a meeting here, you've got a meeting there, who's gonna be around? I mean, maybe we'll come back to this, but communication has been key throughout this this whole experience. So no, I'm seeing a quite difficult impact on family life, I think. And there's an interesting sort of specific impact on men, which I think sort of speaks to the imbalance, which was we ran a series on working dads called Working Dads in Lockdown through September, October, sort of garnering experiences of how it had been for people with the first lockdown and how they'd coped. And the thing that came up time and again, which I hadn't really anticipated, was the lack of commute. Lot of men said they really struggled with the switch from home to work. They really actually, the value in that, whatever, you know, what's the average 40 minutes in a car or on the train or whatever, and they could sort of mentally switch. And, you know, they didn't like having to sit on a crowded train or you know, sit in the car, but that sort of space they really value, turns out. Now, we need to engage with that and say, okay, well, what's going on there? Why are men, why do men need this time to switch? And, you know, why is it specific to men? That doesn't seem quite right. And how do we tackle it? Because, you know, through lockdown, a lot of women didn't get the option to do that. You know, the mums who were sitting at the kitchen table, or, you know, like I have been recently, you can't get any work done. You're expecting to switch, you know, minute to minute to, you know, when your co-worker sits there and says, I can't do this maths, you've got to switch out work. And then you've got to switch back in again and it doesn't work. So I think there's something very interesting going on there. And I think we need to look at why that is. And I wonder if it's to do with men, you know, men's experience of home life, of the domestic sphere. Because one of the ways that we avoid the imbalance in the way that men and women or mums and dads experience lockdown is that men need to do more around the house. I mean, that's fundamentally, men need to do more domestic work because we know they don't do enough. They don't do as much as women. And
so
therefore,
talking about needs to do rather than want to do.
Yeah, absolutely need to do. I mean, we know men don't do as much as women. And as far as I'm concerned, that means they're not doing enough. Because why should women carry the domestic burden? Other than obviously, you know, huge pressures and stereotypes and all the rest of it that trickle down through the centuries. But, you know, we know men did more in lockdown and that was good. But they need to be doing, it needs to be getting somewhere near equality. If that's how you want to live your life. Of course, I'm always wary of being accused of telling people how to live their life. And I certainly, you know, one of the things I've always said throughout this, talking about stuff like flexible working, is that, you know what, if you want to go to an office and work 9 to 5, that's a perfectly valid choice. But it has to be a genuine choice. You know, the same as if, you know, if you want to live in a house where, you know, dad goes out to work 9 to 5 and lives, you know, you live a sort of 1950s style setup, that works for you and you like that, that's fine. But for most people it doesn't work, and most people don't want to live like that. And so we need to have those other options, and that means you know, equality in the domestic sphere as well as out with it. And yeah, you know the domestic work thing, I think if men were more comfortable around domestic work, and that includes childcare, I think then, you know, they wouldn't have such a problem with that switch. And then, you know, it all starts feeding into all sorts of other issues, like how do you get men to be more comfortable in the domestic sphere? You give them more paternity leave, and then they get more used to being a dad, and they you know, they get more confidence again.
Yeah, and it comes more natural.
How are you supposed to get good at being a parent in 2 weeks? You can't. That's ridiculous. Yet that is currently the setup. So, you know, it's, again, it's not about pointing the finger and saying, men, do more, you're rubbish. It's about saying, how do we help men to live the life they want to live, you know, as part of a partnership and part of a family.
It probably takes about 18 years to become a good parent, doesn't it? I imagine. Not 2 weeks. If that, bit more.
One of the mantras that I dole out all the time, and it surprises me the number of people who don't know it, is good enough is good enough. I think that's been key through lockdown, but even before lockdown, it's sort of quite a good parenting mantra. You don't need to be the best mum or the best dad in the world. You know, good enough is good enough for kids.
And the other one is, it is what it is. It is what it is. That's the other lockdown phrase from our family.
And something to do. That's the other thing we come out with. It's like, well, shall we, you know, we're talking about, I don't know, we're going to have like a sushi night at home. because my daughter likes sushi, and it was like, oh, I have to go and get the special fish and put in the effort to make it. And it's like, well, it's something to do.
Yeah, you know, it's just true.
Anything is something to do. I mean, the other day I was cleaning the windows. I was like, well, it's something to do. You know, I can't do anything else.
So let's talk about, you just touched on it earlier. Let's talk about communication in that case. So again, from our, so my personal family setup, communication is vital, as you've just alluded to. And we always say, or my husband says, we are a team. We're all in this together, now including our new dog. He's part of the team too. So we have to communicate, and we have to check in with each other and I suppose empathize, understand when we can step in to help, all those kind of things. So what's your view on communication, as you put it earlier?
I'm thinking about getting a tattoo that says, I'm not really, that says CKC. This is, I'm trying to work out how this works, but this is the catchphrase, is communication is key with COVID. I think I haven't quite worked there. It's something in there. I haven't quite figured out how it works, but yeah, I mean, throughout all this, communication is key in lots of different ways. So it's absolutely about talking to your partner and figuring out. We haven't been so much in this lockdown, but in the first lockdown, we would sit down on a Sunday night and work out what is the homeschool timetable. You know, what work's coming here. You know, what meetings have we got, and so on and so forth. So that's important. I think it's important to talk to the kids, explain to them, I've got a meeting, you know, you're going to have to work by yourself for now. Mm-hmm. As long as they know who's available when and what's expected, then I think that helps. And indeed to talk about, you know, just the general weirdness that we're in, that they understand that we're all finding it very weird. Mm-hmm. But in terms of work, there has to be communication there as well. So, you know, as a employee, you need to be talking to your employer and saying, you know, this is my situation, and you know, therefore I won't be able to, for example, at the moment I don't really do much work in the morning because I'm doing homeschool. I start work at about 2 PM, you know, work through till tea time, which get increasingly late because of that. And pick stuff up in the evening as and when it's needed to, you know, as long as you explain what you can and can't do, I think that helps. And an employer needs to be speaking to their employees, doing exactly the same thing, saying, look, I mean, I think it's better if it comes from the employer in the first instance, saying, what can you do? When can you do it? And just having an open and honest conversation is really helpful. And, you know, unfortunately, I think some people are discovering their employers are not capable of that. And that is not good and something to think about going forward, I think, is, do I want to work for this person? And of course, I think the other way around, I'm sure some employers are finding their employees are not particularly helpful. But yeah, so it's got to be, it's communication across the board, just all the time, is sort of the key element to this. And yeah, it's interesting you mentioned empathy, because I think that's another big sort of theme going forward. I think it ought to be a key plank of building back better.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it's going to be. Certainly at the sort of end of last year, it felt quite a big thing. And now I don't know, but I think we're all a bit scrambled at the start of this year, so I think everything's sort of gone, you know, all the pieces have been thrown up in the air again, and we'll see where they land. But yeah, I think empathy is interesting, precisely because of those conversations that hopefully people were having, instead of just turning up at work every day. You know, employers were now having to say, all right, you've got kids, all right, you've got a puppy, you know, that needs to be taken out, you know, that could fit with work or whatever. And hopefully being a bit more empathetic, okay, so how can we make work fit into this, or life and work, how do we make them fit together? I'm sort of keeping a close eye on empathy. I think that could be a big theme. And I wonder what the timescale might be on that as well. I don't think everybody's suddenly going to become empathetic in the next 6 months, but I think we might be looking back in 5 or 10 years' time going, that was a key change that has sort of played out over time in how workplaces operate. But
it's also something I've mentioned many times. If anyone's listening to my podcast regularly, they'll have heard me say this before, but empathy within a family as well. So when my first lockdown, when my husband was at home for the first time last March, and I was exposed to his 9-to-5, to what goes on in his world when he's at work, and hearing the conversations he's having on his Teams meetings and that kind of thing. And it gave me a completely different perspective as to his his world, his night, his day world. Normally, I wouldn't see because he'd be out of the house, and vice versa. I think we're talking about the domesticity issues before. He is seeing how a self-employed working mum, in my case, at home, is juggling the laundry and the picking up the kids from school and trying to fit in, as you say, half an hour work here and there when she can. And for us, because we communicated and considered ourselves a team, we talked about it, and it's definitely helped, I think, strengthen us seeing the other side, which normally we haven't seen the other side really for years, because we never had to.
Yeah, I mean, we published the results of our survey back in November, and there were some really interesting, there's quite a lot of write-in answers, which is interesting, because, you know, one of the things about men is they don't tend to fill in surveys, they don't tend to speak up, and that is a problem. But there was more, you have all the tick box questions in the survey, and at the end it's, you know, have you got anything else you want to say, which invariably gets left blank by men. But there's a few more of them, and some of them were interesting and some of them were tragic. You know, there was the man who said, you know, he'd spent more time with his family in lockdown than he had in the last 12 years put together. And you just thought, but he also, you know, also said he now appreciated what his wife had been doing for that 12 years.
She was doing something.
But, you know, he was going to try and change his life to be around more going forward. Okay, that's the positive out of all this, is that absolutely we're hearing a lot of men saying, you know, they actually liked being around their families more. And they want to spend more time at home, and they want to be more flexible working, and you know, there's a slight problem sometimes with just mixing up flexible working with home working. Interchangeable home working is a form of flexible working. There are all sorts of other ways of doing flexible working. But men seem to be keen to do more going forward. And I think one of the themes, you know, it's hard to put timescales on this stuff at the moment, but is how do we help men to do that? I mean, that's one of the sort of out of the Working Dads in Lockdown series that we did. I sort of drew up a plan called Building Back Better. How do we make it happen? Because I think it feels like we're in a spot now where we have to make it happen. We can't let things, it'll be very easy to go, God, I'm really tired from lockdown. And that's understandable. And then, all right, who knows? Who knows how the future is going to play out? But say, you know, in 6 months' time, we're able to go back to offices and everyone just goes, oh, let's just go back to how
let's
it was.
Go back to normal.
And that would be understandable. Those of us who sort of want something better, I think, need to be drawing up plans now and saying, right, how do we entrench the changes, the good stuff that we've seen? So that's making it easier for men to do flexible working. You know, empathy, how do we make that a part of workplace culture going forward? You know, well, the stuff around the commute, how do we tackle that issue that men sort of need to have a commute? That's not right. You know, how do we have more flexible working? I'm trying to think what else was on the plan. More paternity leave, exactly, is time in, and you know, now is the time to make the case for that. You know, because gender equality has to be built into Building Back Better, because it gender equality frees up lots of money in the economy. You know, and the economy is going to need help. You know, as I keep saying, any government who does not, you know, build their entire plan to some extent around gender equality is a sexist government. End of. Okay, because, you know, you can make life better for everyone, and you can free up tons of cash to boost the economy if you focus on gender equality. And if you don't, then why not? Other than you are a bunch of, you know, men. And let's face it, they are all men, you know. You know, you're a bunch of men in Downing Street who don't really get it, care. So, you know, I really think, yeah, we have to be sort of thinking now about how we do, you know, keep the gains of lockdown. And there have been some, I mean, amongst all the, you know, I always say, heaven knows, we would rather not be where we are now in so many ways. You know, and yet it's okay to sort of say, this has been horrific and awful, and if we could turn the clock back 12 months, we would. We can't, so let's look for what the gains are and try and take them forward Because, you know, otherwise, what's it all been for?
Exactly. And as you say, seize the opportunity now while it's there, while it's fresh, and let's not go back to what it was in, I think, 6 months' time when we've got this opportunity to get some momentum behind it, I think.
I mean, I was planning to sort of launch that at the start of the year, but again, another thing.
New resolution out the window.
But just because I don't think people want to think about that stuff right now, I think that's understandable. Well, I didn't, because, you know, my brain was scrambled in that first week in January. We're back into homeschooling again. You know, how do we do that and all that stuff. I couldn't think about anything strategic, and I don't think other people could either. But you know, now we're beginning to move on. People are beginning to settle into it. We're beginning to get, well, maybe beginning to get an idea of how the future might play out. In lots of different options. Maybe time to start thinking about making that case again and campaigning again. People might have the capacity to listen.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Now, I don't want to change the subject entirely, but I am going to, because I'm aware that we've got sort of limited time together on this particular episode, and I'm really interested in, I suppose, what you're doing around the gender stereotyping, and obviously the book that you've written, The Gender Agenda, the first book you wrote was all around that. So without any specific question around it, I just really want to get your thoughts, really, and your views around gender stereotyping and how we can, I suppose, all support your campaign, I guess, to keep things more equal between, I suppose, boys and girls. We're talking about children.
Yeah, I mean, it started, well, you could buy the book, you'll get the story. But it was sort of inspired by a project or a book, a German book from, 40 years ago now, called There's a Good Girl. And it was brought to our attention. And so we started a Twitter account charting all the ways our son and daughter were treated differently. And very much that was about, you know, as feminists going, right, we're going to show how unfair the world is to our daughter, and we're going to bust down those barricades and make it fair. But we came out of that project, I mean, you know, it wasn't literally start as a project, it was just something to sort of maybe might be interesting, something to do. But we, you know, eventually after a few years, you begin to go mad because you just see the stereotyping everywhere and you can't sort of switch it off. So we had to sort of draw a line under it to some extent, not draw a line under it, but roll it back a bit. But we came out of it with two sort of big takeaways. One was actually the stereotypes are damaging our son almost as much as our daughter. You know, stereotypes affect everyone and constrict everyone and damage everyone. And that sort of led on to Dads Don't Babysit, because you start thinking about when do these stereotypes really begin to hurt? And it's particularly, I think, when men become dads that, you know, they haven't been raised to think about what that means and how they want to be a father and all this sort of stuff. And the other takeaway was that, you know, we are the biggest influence on our children's lives. You know, it was all about, right, let's go bust everybody else up and be big sexist. And it was like, oh, right, actually, it's us.
Because, no pressure.
We live in society, you know. I'm all for, I've lots of time for people who want to try and raise their children gender neutral, but unless you keep them in a cardboard box, I can't see how it can be done, because they've got to go out into the world and they're going to be subject to gender stereotyping. So that's kind of, that's how it started and where it went. And yeah, I mean, gosh, I haven't got a copy to hand, but I can still remember some of the terrible stories. I mean, the one I like to repeat over and over again is when I was, me and some other dads had our kids together. I think we were watching rugby, you know, very
manly.
And the kids were sort of playing together. And one of the dads had kids same age as mine, and the girl was showing off her ballet moves because she'd been to ballet that morning. And her little brother then copied what she'd done. And he said, oh, look at him, he's a right little Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, goodness.
Like, hang on, he's doing exactly the same moves. And yet, when she does it, it's ballet dancing, and when he does it, it's fighting. You know, that kind of summed it up. Which, oh, but yeah, I mean, there was loads of other excuses. I think it started one of the very first anecdotes in the book is when we went to a panto with the kids when they were small. And I don't know, I don't think they had this when I was younger, but it's very old, but they sell all sorts of horrific plastic flashing lights.
Yes, they do. And
one of the kids, you know, went to the stall, picked up one of these flashing lights, which happened to have a pink handle. And the woman at the stall said, "Oh, shall I get you one of them in blue?" Mm. You know, immediately it was, he's a boy.
Yeah.
He can't have a pink one. That's just, you know, he must want a blue one, right? Yeah. And it's like, well, why?
It's ingrained, isn't it? It's just ingrained.
But of course, he then takes that message on board and goes, oh, I must want it in blue because I'm a boy and boys want blue, right?
So that's,
you know, it's an adult thing, very much explaining this stuff to it. So, yeah, you know, that's sort of where it all started. And it remains, you know, a huge issue around stereotypes. But, you know, the biggest way to break stereotypes is to role model, is to do things different. And, you know, there's plenty of research that if boys, or if children, actually, if children see their dads doing more work around the house, they will do more work around, you know, boys will grow up, do more work around the house.
Yeah.
And that makes life, and girls will expect their male partners or their partners to do more around the house. You know, so that's the biggest way to bust stereotypes, is to challenge, is to role model an alternative. We also had lists in the book of children's books and films that offer different role models, because again, I haven't got the figures to hand, but the vast majority of children's books have male protagonists, or at least the male protagonists do stuff while the female protagonists care, you know, or the male protagonists tend to have more words or whatever. It is skewed quite badly, but you know, there are books out there that feature female protagonists, you know, and books that feature, you know, same-sex families and you know, all sorts of different you know, role models. You know, you've just, unfortunately, you've got to sort of perhaps look a little bit harder to find them, but you don't have to look that hard. And the same with film. You know, gosh, the number of kids' films that are led by male characters. I went to see it's not so bad these days. I went to see a lot of Tinkerbell films, because we were all about, you know, trying to find films with female protagonists. Back then, it was really only Tinkerbell. Although, to be fair, Tinkerbell's quite a good role model.
She's a pretty strong little fairy.
Yeah, she's basically in the films. So she's all right. I mean, I remember, having to go and see them and thinking, oh god. To be honest, you know, probably one or two Tinkerbell films is enough. But of course, these days, you know, the game changer was when you know, old Rey turned up in Star Wars. Like, whoa! I mean, that's massive.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you know, the world was turned upside down. He was an amazing female role model in the biggest franchise in the world. And that made a big difference. So it is a lot better these days. You know, we sort of started talking about what's changed, and certainly in terms of role models and stereotypes, a lot has changed. I mean, there's still a long way to go, but things are certainly better in that regard.
So what's your view then on, there was a big furore about the old Disney films, wasn't there, last year or maybe before last, and all of the fairy tales, which are very, obviously, stereotypically, the victim is the woman and the prince comes and saves her, and they wanted to rewrite them or ban them or all this kind of stuff. My personal view is that is just how it was then. You can't erase history. There's a lot to be said for history and where it has brought us today. So what's your view on those older perceptions of gender stereotyping? Where should they sit now in a more modern society?
It's a tricky one, that, actually. I mean, I certainly have a lot of sympathy with the idea that, you know, fairy tales are part of our you know, our culture, and you sort of need to know them. You need to get the references, because they're obviously referenced all over the place. But I also have a certain amount of sympathy with, you don't really, you could probably go through life without knowing Cinderella, all right? I think, you know, I think the answer is communication again. You know, by all means, watch them, but talk about them. You know, it's, you know, say, why is that? What's going on there? We've got in a habit of watching the old Top of the Pops on a Friday night. They show on BBC4. And it's amazing that, you know, the ones from the 80s, you know, the women are all, you know, all wearing clothes, essentially. Yes. And as you get into their clothes all seem to disappear. It's like, oh, something slowly over time, you know, they seem to wear less. And, you know, my daughter will sit and watch it. And we will, you know, we will say, oh, hang on, what's going on here? Why is this man singing in a suit and the women around him are wearing bikinis? That doesn't make any sense. Either he's very hot or they're very cold, you know. And, you know, you just have to sort of point out stuff. You don't have to be po-faced and boring about You still you need to challenge it where you see it, but you don't need to challenge it in a you know, in an aggressive way or a you know, as a boring way. You just need to plant the seed and talk about it, and you know, you'll have some really interesting conversations with your children.
Exactly. You promote independent thought in them as well, then, don't you, to have their views on the things they're seeing, which may not be in line with what they're being taught or what we're pushing on them. So I think it's really valuable for them to be exposed to as much as possible.
I think I would be wary of you know, pronouncing on that one. I think if people want to ban the old Disney fairy tales, I would be very on board with that. But I'd also be on board with watching them and talking about them.
I'm talking about
Enchanted. Definitely. That's the one to go for. Enchanted.
Okay. Yes. That's, I think I have seen that one. Film. Yes.
That's the one with the princess that falls out of the cartoon world. I mean, she's not terribly gung ho, but it kind of turns it on its head a bit.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you so much. I think we're probably coming to the end of our allocated time now, which is, you know, as with most of my guests, I probably could talk for hours and hours about a variety of topics. So I'll have you on again, I'm sure, in the future. So if anybody wants to get hold of you for any reason, whether it's for to work, to collaborate, or to find out more, I guess, about everything you're working on, then what's the best way to find you?
That's the best way to meet. We're at Political Yeti on Twitter, and we are at Working Dads on Twitter as well. Very much, if you have taken extra paternity leave, done shared parental leave, I want to hear from you, because case studies are hugely important in driving change. You know, just by talking to me and telling me that you did shared parental leave, and everybody I speak to that did shared parental leave said they loved it. Yeah. You know, there's different ways, different stories about how they took it and why they took it. You know, it's not all the bed of roses, you know, if you're working differently, I want to hear about it, because just, you know, half an hour talking to me, you can genuinely make a big difference, because I can then put that in front of lots of other men who will read that and think, okay, I might try that too. So get it through Twitter or on workingdads.co.uk. There's plenty of ways to message us there. Please do message me. workingmums.co.uk gets tons of questions and content and messages all the time, because women are good at asking questions and talking. I sit on Working Dads just waiting for somebody to send me a message. So, you know, stop me from being lonely and just send me a message. Send me your thoughts on anything I'm writing. Or, like I say, if you've got, I'm happy to take blogs from people who want to write about issues, and I'm happy, very happy to hear case studies. Find us on Twitter, or just head to workingdads.co.uk and you'll be able to get in touch there.
Cool. And I also do what I can to spread that message and get more Working Dads to step up and have that conversation with you too.
Brilliant.
So thank you so much, James. It's been great to have you on. Have a lovely day in the sunshine today, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Straight off into another meeting now. My co-worker
had a meeting. Non-interrupted. And a nice day with your co-worker, I hope, as well, to follow.
But my co-worker had a Zoom meeting with one of his co-workers to work out the Tudor family tree after that.
Thank you so much, James. Have a good day.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, brilliant. Okay. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Bye.
What a fantastic, insightful conversation with James. And he was absolutely right to pick me up at the start of our conversation. The reason he's all about the rights of working dads is to help working mums. Making life better for men will make life better for women. It's refreshing to hear someone speak so candidly about gender equality. And please do get in touch with him if you have any stories to share. So see you next time on The Parent Equation, where I'll be joined by Alice Stapleton, a career coach and mum of one.